Good afternoon. I am honored to return to WKAJ Light FFM 8593 on the FFM dial. That's Frankfurt am Main, of course. A couple of public service announcements before we begin our shiur. Just to remind anyone who is not listening now, I know I'm not talking to you, but if you talk to your friend or anything else, when anyone wants to listen to shiurim which are not being given live right now, they are all on KAJ's website with the same password as that which you just hopefully entered. But you do not call this number, you go on KAJ's website. Additionally, I wanted to clarify one point from last week's shiur which I gave. I think I may have misspoken. It is tsaras habatim, tsaras that may occur in houses, which will always require a hesker period, which will always require a quarantine from the very beginning. Now, for this week's shiur, my topic is sphira topics, a rather broad heading, and indeed, sphira as we know it today sometimes seems to be comprised of rather disparate elements. Let us look at some of the historical layers of what we know as the sphira period. First of all, of course, we encounter the mitzvah, the entire reason we call this sphira ha'omer. We have a mitzvah min ha-Torah to count from the bringing of the Korban Omer, which is the second night of Pesach, all the way to Shavuos, at which point the Shtei HaLechem are brought. A very famous Korban comprised of including Chometz. We go from Pesach Matzah all the way to Shavuos. And as we know, of course, those 49 days are that we're counting are from Yetzias Mitzrayim all the way to Matan Torah. Now, over some 1,300 years later, Sphira took on an aspect of Avelus because of the death of Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim. Very famously, Gemara tells us, Shneim osa elef zugim Talmidim hayu lo Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva had 12,000 pairs of Talmidim, Megeves ad Antipras, from all over Eretz Yisrael. Bekulon mesu beperek echad. Fortunately, they all were nifter at one time period, because they had not acted with the proper degree of kavod required between each other. The world was desolate from Torah, until Rabbi Akiva, who had just experienced the loss of 24,000 Talmidim, which perhaps in our today's situation brings such a number closer to home than other years, 24,000 Talmidim were nifter, but Rabbi Akiva didn't give up. He traveled, he came to the famous Talmidim he would later have who were in Dorom and southern Eretz Yisrael, Ushna Lahem, and he taught them. Who are they? Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. Vehem heim he'emidu Torah osasho. His famous Talmidim, through whom we have most of our Mishnayos, most of our Torah, were Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, who by the way is Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, and Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. Now, we learn another thing. Tana, kulam mesu mipesach v'araseres. All of these 24,000 Talmidim who were nifter, we said they were nifter at one time period. What time period was that? Mipesach v'araseres. From between Pesach towards Shavuos. Amar Rav Chama ba'abo, we have another comment about their death. Kulam mesu misa ra'a. They all were nifter from the same cause, a very terrible sort of death. Mayhi, what is this terrible cause of death? Amrav Nachman aschera. Aschera is a disease, it's a condition, it is often translated as diphtheria. It's a condition in one's throat, and these Talmidim all were nifter from that. So as we know, the Gemara blames this on Shalom Noagu Kavod Zebazeh, and the Maharsha elaborates a bit. He says, what was this kavod that they were required to give to each other? That's the kavod ha-Torah. When we honor a Talmid Chacham, we're honoring him for the Torah which he has learned. So Torah is samachayim, Torah is chayim. If they chose to ignore that, then they also were ignoring life itself, and they suffer the consequences, mida keneged mida. He also suggests that since they were not being very careful about honoring each other, that may have led to some of them having spoken Lashon Hara about each other also. And the Gemara tells us in Shabbos that Askara, this terrible disease of the throat and near the mouth, is a siman for Lashon Hara. And additionally, he notes that this time during Sfirat HaOmer, I think a lot of us have always learned at the right before Matan Torah, one has to work especially on one's nidos, and they were nifka at that time. The Maharsha makes another note. He says, their being nifka in this springtime, Sfirat HaOmer, was to bring out the total hashkocha-ness of their petira, that the Kodesh Baruch Hu so designated them. They were not to live anymore because of this lack which they had of kavod zeh bazeh. So why was it at spring? Because the Maharsha says spring is usually a healthy time. As we are all pointing out, right, the flu season has ended, and I know some people were even hoping the warm weather would maybe even end this. That shall remain to be seen. But spring is usually a healthy time of year, he says. So the fact that these 24,000 people suddenly came down with an illness and died at this time of year was to show this was all from above and for us to take some lessons from that. So from that time on, as we know, Sfira has been overlaid. Of course, it depends on your minog, exactly how you count that period of the Sfira which you keep as a velus, but Sfira has taken on a more somber tone. And the Lag BaOmer is the exception. A lot of the Sfarim just bring down that it's an exception, one can listen to music, etc. The Ulaina is a tam. It's perhaps for some reason or another. Sfarim don't usually like to go into anything relating to Kabbalah, but one thing we do know is that Lag BaOmer is generally accepted to be the yahrzeit of one of Rabbi Akiva's later great five Talmidim who we just mentioned, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Then, continuing in our very quick survey of Jewish history, just about 1,000 years after that, Klal Yisrael unfortunately suffered another terrible Gezerah, and around the year 1096 and onwards, which we call Gezeras Tatnu. That was the first part of the First Crusade. Historically, it's known as the People's Crusade. The First Crusade altogether was a terrible thing, and the first part of it was even worse. It was the mobs, the rabble, who ran ahead of the regular armies, who couldn't be controlled by anyone, and they caused tremendous, tremendous decimation of Klal Yisrael. We read about this in the kinos of Tisha B'Av, specifically Kino Nem, which was written by Rabbeinu Klonimus, who lived through these gezeros. We read about the Rhine Kehelos of Shvayer and Worms and Mainz, who all were tremendously heroic in the Mesiras Nefesh during those terrible gezeros. And these gezeros, it was not just a one-off thing. It lasted for about 200 years, often in the spring after Pesach, between the blood libels and the Crusades. It was a terrible, terrible thing. We are reminded of that, first of all, by the Zulosim, which we recite every Shabbos during Iyar, during our period of Avelos. We recite these Zulosim, very sad descriptions of Golos and how we await the Redeemer, the Geula. And additionally, it was from the time of the Crusades that the Tefillah of Av HaRachamim, which we say rarely on Shabbos morning, was accepted into the Seder HaTefillah. As we know, we only say this Tefillah twice a year, in fact, on Shabbos Chazon, very sad Shabbos, and also the Shabbos directly preceding Shavuos, which around here is known as Shvat Shabbos, also recalling these terrible gezeros. So Sfirat HaOmer seems to include a lot of different aspects. Let us first focus, on the Torah's mitzvah for us to count Sfira. So, the Sefer HaChinuch reminds us and tells us that it's a mitzvah midoraisa bizman habayis. At this time, when we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we do it midorabanan. It was midoraisa when the actual Korban HaOmer could be brought, then they were counting. It's a mitzvah in all places, on Zecharim. And the Sefer HaChinuch continues, he says, interesting, Mishrashay HaMitzvah, from among the ideas behind the mitzvah, and he adds, outside ha-peshat, and based in the simple meaning of Sfirat HaOmer, and he continues. So we should note at this point, our shiur is certainly not going over there, but as we know, many Sfira charts, not including our Omer table, have a lot of other things on them. They include the Sfiros, the Chesed Shebechesed, etc., etc. There's very, very much also to be said on a deeper level of Sfira. That's not where we're headed right now, but it does deserve mentioning. However, the Sefer HaChinuch says, Altsad HaPshat, what is the simple meaning behind this counting? So he says very clearly, the Iker Geula of Yisrael, the main Geula which we were awaiting, was Matan Torah. And therefore, we count La Omer, the number of days already counted, fewer and fewer days till we reach our goal. Just like a prisoner is usually the marshal, a prisoner who's awaiting release, he's counting down. And it's, indeed, we were prisoners, of course, Avodim Hayinu, Vaparo B'Mitzrayim, but we were not truly in Cheirus until we received the Torah. As Perkei Avos says in the last Perek, which we read right before Shavuos, Al Tikra Chorus Ela Cheirus. The Luchos are described as Chorus, as being engraved by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not only can you read it as Chorus, but as Cheirus, as true freedom. And the Sefer HaChinuch adds, we don't start from the very first day of Pesach, because that particular day is Miyuchad. It's really entirely about Yetzias Mitzrayim itself. But from the very next night on, we start counting towards the true Geula, towards Matan Torah. And he says the fact that the Torah puts it as the Omer, you start counting when you bring the Omer, he says, well, it's a much easier and better way to put it than L'yom Sheni Shel Pesach, which would surely throw everybody off likely by a day. I'm counting what number day? Wait, I'm not counting from Pesach, I'm counting from the second night of Pesach. Do I add one? Do I minus one? Etc. You can imagine the fun that would be going on. So he says we start with La Omer because that was a clearly known date. Everyone knew, oh, well, La Omer means the 16th of Nisan. That means the second night of Pesach. And so we start the Sfira, he says, by connecting it to the Omer, and we count onwards towards Matan Torah, towards Shavuos. Rav Hirsch takes up the idea of when we count and the connection to the Omer, and he elaborates a little bit more. He says, we read in Parshas Re'eh, which we just read the last day of Pesach, actually, and we'll read again the second day of Shavuos, Mehachel chemesh bakotzir tisperu lachem chemishim yom. When the sickle begins the harvest, so you need to begin counting. And he explains, the harvest is the time of bounty and prosperity. He says, where all other nations would cease to count. By the time it's harvest, they've reached their goals, their national prosperity goals, they've gotten there. It's already harvest time, whereas we are only beginning. We start to count. We start counting to Matan Torah, because the Torah is alone which lends us value and significance to all these things. It's the only reason for their existence. It's the only reason for us having Eretz Yisrael. And he says, in fact, when Bnei Yisrael forgot this, when they said, oh, you know, we have a right to a land like any other. Of course we have a harvest. That's not a problem. That's what we have. He says, when they deified the sickle, they lost the sickle. When they forgot the counting starts, when you think, all other nations will think, we're done, we've made it. That's what Bnei Yisrael left to start. When they forgot that, so they also lost their national existence, their national prosperity. And in fact, as a Hirschian explanation of what we read in the summer, one of our Haftarahs, we say in Navi, Kemispar arecho hayu elohecho Yisrael, Yehuda. We usually say, as numerous as your cities were your gods, meaning you had a million billion idols. The verse takes it a little differently, and he says, Kemispar arecho, the number of cities, those were your gods. When you were counting on your cities, on your politics, on your stratagems, those became deified by you, so that was a problem, and you lost it all. The verse continues, though, and he says, today, as we mentioned before, we count Sfiro Midrabonon. The Rabbonon told us we should keep on counting, even though Midoraisa would not really apply because we don't have this Korban HaOmer. So he says this is an empty count. We don't have the sickle anyway. And he answers, far from it. In fact, he notes all the historical tragedies of the Omer, which we alluded to briefly before, and he points out that Israel, during Golos, when it was a test of suffering, we have responded brilliantly. All the Mesiras Nefesh that we're aware of, and probably much more that we're not aware of, throughout the millennia, that we have surpassed any demanded level. Israel has been brilliant. However, he says, the Nisyonos now being faced in his time, and that has not really changed much since his time. In fact, it's probably even more. The Nisyonos we face of trying to fit in, we should not be ready to trade off any part of our Torah values for political rights, for fitting in, etc. So that has always been, sad to say, the harder test. And he says, therefore, this counting is extremely appropriate today, just as it was long ago when it was Doraisa. Rabbanon were very far-sighted, he says. And indeed, we have to keep this in mind today also. Mehachel chamesh bakotzir. When you think everything is so great, I just need some political rights, that I have a land then, it's not a problem. So that's indeed immediately, right at that point, is when we have to start counting towards our actual goal of Torah. And it's probably slightly appropriate to be saying these words on the 6th of Iyar. Another thing we should point out as we're heading towards Matan Torah, towards Shavuos, is, of course, our minhag of saying Pirkei Avos. As we may be aware, the original minhag was actually to just say Pirkei Avos from between Pesach until Shavuos, with the idea of there being a preparation for us to be Zocher, to be Mekabel the Torah. Later, Pirkei Avos was extended. Most of the world extends it all the way to Rosh Hashanah, and we seem to extend it to Shavuos of Tammuz. I guess the rationale being, hopefully, by the time we get to Bein HaMetzarim, we've already improved ourselves a little bit, because Bein HaMetzarim is certainly all about Ahavas Yisrael and Natsinas Chinam, so hopefully we'll have gained already from the Pirkei Avos. But as we said, the original span of Pirkei Avos was from Pesach to Shavuos. And another thing that perhaps you may not be aware of is the actual Maseches Avos, per se, is 5 Parakim. The Parakim you see in your Siddur, Parak Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, He, that is what is known really as Maseches Avos. The last, 6th Perek, is a Braisa. A Braisa is a collection of Torah materials from the same Tanoim who appear in the Mishnah, but it was not collated, it was not included in the Mishnah by Rabbeinu HaKadosh, by Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. However, it is included in our recital, and it is included in most Sfarim these days, because it is extremely apt. That last 6th Shabbos is, of course, the Shabbos right before Shavuos. And that last, what we consider the 6th Perek, this Braisa is known as the Braisa Kinyan HaTorah, of how to acquire the Torah. One of the longest parts of that Perek is, of course, the 48 ways that Torah is nicknames. The Braisa goes through 48 different midos. It is very worthwhile and important to have if one wants to truly acquire Torah. And Mefarshim do note that between 48 and 49, there's surely a correlation. The suggestion is there's probably a midah per day, with perhaps either the first day just to work on it entirely, or the last day to look back and try to include all the 48 midos that you have already learned, try to include them all together. Now, as we look at Sfiras HaOmer, including all of the different historical parts of it, but certainly the mitzvah itself, it's interesting. We find the same Hebrew shorish in relation to Pesach, in relation to Sfiras HaOmer, and in relation to Matan Torah. And that shorish is Samach Pei Reish, Saper, or Safar. We have Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, the mitzvah to tell over, to recount the Nisim and the flows that Hashem did for us by Yitzias Mitzrayim. The wording Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim comes from the pasuk early in Shemos, in Sefer Shemos, Laman Asher Tisaper Ba'oznei Bincha Uven Bincha Eitz Asher His Alalti B'Mitzrayim. Hashem says to Moshe, through all these makos and Nisim and the flows, you shall be able to tell, you shall tell your son and your son's son, all your children, your generations, all the neflos, all the makos that I have wrought in Mitzrayim. So that's Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. Then, from the second night on, of course, we have Sefiras HaOmer, Usfartim Lochem. From the time the Korban Omer is ready to be brought, the second day of Pesach, you shall count for yourselves, Lispar. In the Kal, Lispar means to count. In the PL, Lissaper is to recount. And this is found in many languages, a connection of to count and to recount. We just said in English, I suppose in Yinglish we have to tell and to tell over, and in German, zählen and erzählen. By the way, saper, which might seem very relevant to Sfiras HaOmer, to count hair, a barber is a sapor, is actually not ever found in this usage in Tanakh, and it seems that that meaning is not even from Lashon Kodesh, it's from Aramaic. Found in the Mishnah and Gemara, it's used in Hebrew. Today it certainly is used, the Sapor, and already way back in the Mishnah, but that's not a Tanakh word, so that was not my connection to Sfiras HaOmer, and we shall see some more. So Rav Hirsch, who tries to always relate etymologies of words of Shoroshim to connect and explain, so he says very simply, a sofer, somebody who's counting, combines things according to their external resemblance. As we say, you can't count apples and oranges. You count things that are similar. you put things together. A misaper, somebody who's telling something, combines things according to an inner causal connection. He combines events that are in a cause and effect connection. He's telling a story. By the way, the fact that we call a sofer somebody who writes is because when you write a Sefer Torah, or even before you attempt to write one, you need to count. You need to be very, very well aware of the totals and the amounts of different letters in a Sefer Torah. So a sofer is actually someone who counts. We use it as someone who writes, but that's not actually what the word means. So, very interesting. For Yetzias Mitzrayim, we have the mitzvah to recount, to relate the story. In Sfiras HaOmer, as we come closer to Matan Torah, we have the mitzvah in Lekal, Lispor, to count towards something. Perhaps one can note, relating these two ideas, that regarding Yetzias Mitzrayim, we know, the Haggadah tells us, Chayav Odom Lir'os Es Atzmo Ki'ilu Hu Yotza Mimitzrayim. A person is obligated to see himself ke'ilu, as if it was he himself who left for Mitzrayim. Even though it was actually my great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather and grandmother who left Mitzrayim, but I am obliged to view myself as having left Mitzrayim myself. And in fact, the Rambam has a slightly different girsa in the Haggadah. He says, La'haros es atzmo, to show to himself. Because honestly, you were not there. But one has to show to himself as if he was there. And that would be lesaper, to recount, to make it feel as if we were actually there. One might perhaps say that no such statement is made by Matan Torah, and the reason would be very obvious, because by Matan Torah, all of us were actually there, and Neshamos were there. There's no need to recount. We count every year looking up to that point. First of all, we all were there back then, our Neshamos were there. And also, as was brought down in many Sfarim, every year we experience again the Kabbalah Satorah. It's something we count to. It is not perhaps something that as much requires recounting, since we were all actually there. So we have Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim and Sfira towards Matan Torah. However, we are not done with this Shoresh. We find this same Shoresh, however this time as a noun, actually right at Matan Torah. As we know, at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, Matan Torah's description continues. We've left off by the Aseret HaDibros in Parshas Yisro. We then veer off to Parshas Mishpatim, which seems very different, all the dinim, halachos, etc. But then in Perek Chof Dalid, we return to Matan Torah, and we receive a few more descriptions of what it was like when we were all there standing in Hasinai. And the pasuk tells us that Moshe and Aaron and the Nadav and Avihu and the Shivim Zakenim, all to their respective levels, approached HaSinai, and Vayiru Eis Elokei Yisrael. They saw Kiviyochol HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Sachas Ragvav, underneath his feet, Kema'asei Livnas HaSapir, was something like a sapphire brick, Ucha'etzem HaShamayim LaTohar, and like the perfection of Shamayim for purity. It was as pure as the zenith of Shamayim of the heavens. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's footstool, Kiviyochol, is described as a sapphire brick, which the Mefarshim identify, actually, as something which we read about in the Haftarah of the first day of Shavuos. Now that Haftarah is not usually translated at all, and that is very proper. Yechezkel is describing things which we have no conception of at all. However, when Chazal mentions something, when they note something to us, we can note it too. And Yechezkel describes among his, in his tremendous Mara, which he sees, he says, Umimal Rakia, and above the Rakia, whatever that means, or some part of the seven heavens which he was zoche to see, Asher Arosham, which was above the Malachim that he's seeing, there was a Rakia, a spread out divide or sky above them. He saw above them Kemar A, Evan Sapir, the appearance of a sapphire stone, Demus Kisei, with the appearance of a throne. That's how he describes what we know, what we call the Kisei HaKavod. Rashi on our pasuk in Chumash explains, what is this Livnas HaSapir, this brick of sapphire? Why would you describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu's throne and his footstool, all that appertains to his Kisei HaKavod, as describing it as a brick? There are surely other ways to describe a rectangular or a square object, if even these shapes have any meaning up there. So Rashi explains from Chazal that it appeared, Hashem chose it to appear as a lavena, as a brick, during the Shibud. Because Hashem, even in all of His tremendous glory as being described up in the highest heavens, is with us down here in our Shibud. Imot Anochi Batzara. So His Kisei HaKavod, Kiviyachol, is being described as a brick, because that was what our Tzaros down here were. We were the brick makers in Mitzrayim, so Hashem's own throne is described as a Levena. But now, by Matan Torah, Rashi explains, it was Ke'etzem HaShamayim LaTovar. It had the brilliance, the purity of a clear sky blue sky. He says now it was brilliant, now it was full of or of the chedva, as he describes it, in the Yeshua. It sparkled brilliantly because Hashem now did not have the tzoros of Bnei Yisrael. Instead, He was involved in their greatest Yeshua, in having taken them out of Mitzrayim, and now, presently, He was giving them the Torah, the greatest gift. So now it can be described as sparkling brilliantly, like the Rakia. Now, I will just let you know that Sapir, this, which we translated as sapphire, all the dictionaries, in fact, take the word sapphire and they go back to Latin and Greek, and then I was amused because about half of them say unknown origin. So the origin obviously is our word sapir or sanpirinon. Some of the dictionaries do bring it as Hebrew, some say Proto-Indo-European, something like that. That would be our sanpirinon, as Chazal say, or sapir. A side point is actually whether this word, sapir, which definitely leads to our English word sapphire, does it actually, though, refer to our sapphires as we know them today, or perhaps rather to the stone that today we know as lapis lazuli? That's a question because apparently sapphire is not mentioned elsewhere until a little bit later in history, later than the Torah times. It's not a proof either way. And either way, in fact, both sapphire and lapis lazuli both mean blue. So they're both beautiful blue gemstones. On the third hand, we can also note that although Rashi and many Mefarshim translate Livnas HaSapir as being the smichos for a brick, a lavena. How do you say a brick of? You say Livnas HaSapir, a brick of sapphire. There are, however, other Mefarshim, including the Rashbam, who says Livnas is from the word Lavon, white. And he takes it to mean a beautiful whiteness of this sapphire stone, which is just very interesting because sapphire actually does come in white too. It's very rare, I just learned this, but sapphire does come in a few colors, including white, whereas lapis lazuli does not seem to. So perhaps sapphire, even as we know it today, is actually the best translation, and either way, it's certainly where the word comes from. So let's look a little bit more into what this pasuk is telling us. This pasuk always struck me. It actually seems more like a Navi, almost like what Yechezkel is describing. The Chumash is usually telling us something that we need to do or learn from in this world below. Describing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Kisei HaKavod is extraordinary. There's surely, though, something we also can learn from it. So we mentioned Rashi, who explained the Imo Anochi Betzara, and Rav Hirsch explains a little bit differently. He says how Bnei Yisrael, at this tremendous giloy they had at Matan Torah, what did they see at His feet? They saw, for the building up of His throne, they saw a brick of sapphire. When they were Avodim, they built bricks for the might of the pharaohs. That was their main job, and it was to build up the economy, to build up the strength, the prosperity of these temporal rulers, of these pharaohs. But now, as Avdei Hashem, what they saw, this vision that they were zochet to see, they saw Kiviyachol Hashem as Kisei HaKavod and this brick at its foot for the building up of His throne, what they saw, what they learned, was that now our job is indeed to make bricks, but for the upbuilding, as he puts it, of Hashem's kingship on earth. Nasa v'nishma, which they had just previously said, is that first brick. And the bricks are made of sapir, ke'etzem hashamayim latohar. These bricks are not the mortar and straw and things that they were making in Mitzrayim. They saw that everything material and earthly, but that which is brought in faithful service to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to the divine building plan, becomes fused with the heavenly. It becomes permeated with Tara, and can be rightly described as ke'etzem hashamayim latohar. This is a worldly brick. Down here we use actual bricks. We use actual physical things that we use in our lives, in our work, in our avoda, in our entire avoda tachayim. But when we are doing this with a Torah goal, as the Pirshat said about the Sphira also, the whole purpose of Me'achel Chemesh Bakotzir, the point of your agricultural and economical and mechanical, everything that you're doing down here, must be with the goal of Torah. So when you are doing that, when you are building bricks for the Kisei HaKavod, for Hashem's glory in this world, those bricks become full of Tahara, and they can be described as Ke'etzem HaShamayim LaTohar. And as we also mentioned, of course, the Luchos, which we just described before, Al Tikra Chorus Elocherus. The Luchos, which give us Hashem's first commands, the overview of all the mitzvos which we must be doing down here, which, for which our entire goal must be. So we said, Al Tikra Chorus Elocherus. That gives us our true freedom. And very interestingly enough, the second Luchos, which were to be made of stone down here. The first Luchos, of course, were made out of heavenly stone. Moshe had ascended on Shavuos, or right after, empty-handed. And he came down with stones made of heavenly material, and, of course, written on by Hashem, engraved. The second Luchos, though, were to come from down here. We had not been Zoche. We had suffered the Chet HaEgel in between, and when, finally, by Rosh Chodesh Elul, everything was fixed up, we had done proper teshuva, Moshe had been a tremendous guta beta, he had davened properly for us, and Hashem told him, okay, come up, I'll write the second set of luchos. He told him, pesol lucha, as we read every tannis. Go and extract for yourself stone, bring them up, and then I, says Hashem, I will rewrite the luchos thereupon, the dibros. So Chazal tell us, very interestingly, what were those second set of luchos made out of? They were made out of sanpirinon, out of this very same sapphire stone. Surely not an accident. Surely, Rav Hirsch would say, although I didn't see it yet, surely he would say this is the same idea. We had to take these luchos, in particular the second luchos, which were, if one may say, an isarusa duasata. They were earthly. They had required our tremendous davening and teshuva to be zocha to them at all again, and to take those earthly materials and to elevate them, so that it can be like sapir, it can be ke'etzem ha-shamayim la-tohar, tremendous heavenly blue color which represents beyond and above, as we shall see soon. And in fact, our Achayim HaKadosh takes things a step further, and he says that the luchos, besides for being the luchos which we are familiar with from Shamayim given to Moshe Rabbeinu, which then lived in the Aron, luchos also can be represented of, and they can be symbolized by our neshamos. He says, it says twice, in fact, in Mishlei, kosveim aluach libecha. Write it on the board, on the tablet of your heart. That's a luach. In fact, I'm just saying this, it says two times in Mishlei, maybe the luchos, twice. In any case, he says, neshama can be termed the luchos, on which Hashem is we are to allow Hashem to engrave his commands on us, so that we'll keep them. And he says, when we say by Sfiras HaOmer, Usfartem Lochem, you shall count for yourselves. That's the pshat. But he takes it as Usfartem, as a verb form of the noun sapir, sapphire, the luchos. He says, by improving yourselves by and through the Sfira period, you should bring back to yourself that shining luchos shel sanpirinon, which are your neshamos. You should polish them of any tarnish, that they will again brilliantly shine like etzem hashamayim latohar. Now, all of this discussion of sky blue and sapir and etzem hashamayim latohar may have perhaps reminded you of another very important color of which we read of in Chazal, in fact, which we read of in the Torah, and which Chazal described more. As we know, tzitzis originally were to contain at least one thread of techeles, of sky blue wool. And we read in Menachos that Rabbi Meir Omer, Ma nishtana techeles mikol minei tzavonin. What is different about techeles than all the other colors? Why, may we ask, did Hashem choose techeles to be the one colored thread of the tzitzis? By the way, the rest of the tzitzis are generally lavan, they're generally white, because we learned they can be the color of the beged, of the clothing. Back then, it seems most people wore white, or perhaps rather natural, undyed clothing, so they were kind of white. And that's generally why Chazal call the rest of the tzitzis a lavan, they were white. And in fact, today, of course, you don't generally see people with orange tzitzis unless somebody spilled something in preschool. Generally, they're white. But the one required color is techeles. So Rabbi Meir answers, why is this one color of techeles so important? Mipnei, because techeles dome layom, techeles is somewhat similar to the color of the sea, of the ocean. The yam dome lerakia. The ocean is somewhat similar to the color of the sky. Rakia lekisei hakavod. And the sky, at this point we have to say kevyochol, but the sky resembles the color of the kisei hakavod. How do we know that? Shenemar, the pasuk that we mentioned before from Yechezkel, Besachas raglov, the pasuk we mentioned in Chumash, Besachas raglov, kamaasei livnas asapir, uchesem ashamayim latoar. Beneath his feet, kevyochol, was the workings of a brick of sapphire, as pure as the zenith of the sky. Uchsiv, and it also says in Yechezkel, as we connected it before, kemare evan sapir demus kisei. It was the show, it was the look of a sapphire stone with a shape, with a form of a kisei, of a throne. So this is why Tefeles was chosen of all colors, says Rabbi Meir, to be the representative color of Tefeles, where Uri'isam also uzachartim. You will see this striking color in the tzitzis, and you should remember all these things. Remember Yitzias Mitzrayim, you remember Lasos Kol Mitzvoso, to do all the mitzvos, etc. The Klei Yochar, though, analyzes specifically why Chazal had to put so many stages in between Techeles and the Kisei HaKavod. Again, they said Techeles resembles the ocean, the ocean resembles the sky, and the sky resembles, in some Ruchnia sense, resembles the Kisei HaKavod. So, first of all, we may note in general there is a concept of there are so many stages and levels of Ruchnias, there are so many worlds that we're not even aware of, that often Mesholim, Algabe Mesholim, Algabe Mesholim are used to try to help us understand anything. When we talk about a Yad Hashem, a hand of Hashem, kivyochol, on a human hand, that's a tremendous, besides for a quality, there's no comparison at all. There's no Yad Hashem, it's completely Ruchni, but it's also just such a vast gap. Sometimes Mesholim help us build up the stages of Ruchnius a little bit. But the Klei Yochar explains more specifically why first we compare Techeles to a Yam, and then the Yam to Rakia, to the sky, and then the sky to the Kisei HaKavod. So he says, when we look at the Techeles, and we're reminded of the sea, says the Yam itself could help us in our Avodas Hashem, but only to a certain degree. And he brings a Medrash, and there are also some Sukkim, I think, which describe the Yam, the oceans, as doing Hashem's will. But they do it out of fear. The ocean is told, do not overstep your boundary. It's really tremendous if one thinks about it. The ocean is probably one of the powerfulest forces in nature. And yet those waves, they come again and again. They don't overstep the boundary. Why doesn't the ocean just flood over completely? It could, by the marble, etc. But it usually doesn't. It's held in place by a certain tremendous yiras kono. It's a tremendous fear of Hashem. So, we even say by Kriyas Yamsuf, we say Yigar Bayom LaYecharot. Hashem screamed at the Yam and it split. It's, the oceans can remind us of a tremendous Yira, even just the powerfulness of themselves. It's like we say Shekocho Gvuroso or something like that. It reminds us of Yiras Elokim. However, he says, the Rakia, if we take that thought a step further, if we're reminded by the Techeles to the Yam, and then the ocean hopefully reminds us of the sky, he says the Rakia and all of its residents, all of the solar system, the sun, the moon, all of the myriad galaxies up there, they seem, as it's described by the Psukim and by Chazal, they seem to have a certain more of an Avodas Hashem out of Ahava, out of joy. As we read in Tehillim, Yosis ki Gibor, describing the sun in its daily circuits, as the way we put it, Yosis ki Gibor, it rejoices like a mighty warrior as it comes out. It's described as such, and in the Piyutim also, the Tfilos, which we say on Shabbos, we describe the sun and the moon of Tvamaram, Samechim b'Tzeisam, V'Sasim b'Vo'am. They are joyously going out. They rejoice when they come home, when they come back at night. There's apparently, perhaps because the Rakia is already more on a Ruchnias stage, it's just a suggestion, I don't know, but in some sense the Rakia has more of a relation to Hashem, to Av, than does the Yam. And therefore, if we would remember from the Techeles to look at the Yam, to already develop a Yiras Shamayim, which is a tremendous level in and of itself. But then if we take it a step further to look at the Rakia, so we could develop also Avas Hashem, be reminded of such, and then when one is already on the level of Avas Hashem, so then I guess one has a better shot at some understanding, some connection to the Kisei HaKavod, and to its resident, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's what the Klei Yochor has to say about Tzecheles in Tzitzis. Now, if we go a little bit further, we should really examine what does this word Tzecheles exactly mean. What is this Tzecheles? We translate it as sky blue wool, and it seems it's a good translation, but that's obviously not what the word means. So Rashi brings in the Parsha Tzitzis at the end of Shalach, very interesting translation, or at least explanation. I'm not sure if he's really claiming that's exactly what the word means. But he says, why do we call this blue wool in our tzitzis Tzecheles? He says, Al-Shem Shikul Bechoros. Because of the Bechoros being killed and the bereavement that everyone felt from the death of these Bechoros. As we know, in Aramaic, a lot of times a shin becomes a tof. Just like we had in Chag Gadyah, we said V'asa Torah. That's not the Torah, of course, that's with an aleph at the end. And it's the same as the Hebrew word for shor, an axe, becomes a tof. A lot of times your shin switches to a tof. So shikul, to be bereft of someone, to have someone die, is tichla in Aramaic. And Rashi says that's Tzecheles. That's to remind us of the nisim that Hashem did for us, including right at Yetzias Mitzrayim, the shikul b'choros, the makas b'choros, which killed off all the b'chorim in Mitzrayim. The Ramban offers a different take on the word Tzecheles, and he says, it's romeis, it hints to us, lamido hakoleles hakol, shehi bakol, vehi tachlis hakol, which I cannot describe, I cannot translate even his words exactly, because he's referring already to very, very great and ruchnius concepts, but we would say something like, this word Tzecheles, which is related to tachlis, is what he's saying, it reminds us of Hashem's omnipotence, and is all-encompassing world guidance. It's the Tachlis. And the Ramban, very interestingly, we know, the Ramban was a doctor. He was also of a scientific bent, besides for his tremendous Torah and Kabbalah knowledge. He notes that not only is the word Tzecheles related to Tachlis, to an end, to all-encompassing, but he says the color, too. He says it's just like the sky, and just like anything that you see at far distances. As we know, like when you're driving, you see mountains in the distance, they all tend to fade away to a bluish tint, to a bluish color. And that is actually for the same reason as the sky looks blue. Because of the way the light is scattered, things seen at very far distances take on a look just like the sky does. They're not reflecting the sky, but you see it because of the light, the same way as why the sky is blue. So it says this, the name and both the color itself are to remind us of, like, so to say, the horizon, the all-encompassing, far tachlistic hanhoga of Hashem of this world. And Rav Hirsch also goes along these lines, and he says, he translates the Tzecheles as sky blue, and he says it's the color that points to the limits, to the tichla of our horizon, to what lies beyond our field of vision, to the hidden, to the divine. He says this, actually, regarding the Mishkan, where in some of his essays and also in Terumah, he gives very interesting explanations to the four main materials which are used in the Mishkan. He talks about Sheish, the linen. He says that's vegetable life, that's non-living things, non-moving, vegetable or also domim, not the non-animal part of life. He says that's Sheish, the linen. And he says the Shoni and the Argamon are two levels of animal life. He ends up taking it as animal and human. And Tzecheles, the sky blue wool, he takes as divine, as something beyond us. What also has been pointed out by some Mefarshim is blue, when we think about it in terms of darkness, it's somewhere between black and white. And they say that black represents usually Midas HaDin, and white is Midas HaRachamim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hanhoga is so to say, blue. It's a mixture of them. It's somewhere in between. And indeed, that's perhaps what one could say also about these rather various descriptions of Techeles. From Rashi's going from Yetzias Mitzrayim, he describes Shikul Bochoros. We name the whole, we choose Techeles, we describe Techeles referring back to the Midas Adin, which Hashem showed in Mitzrayim. And even for us, by Yetzias Mitzrayim, he appeared, as Chazal say, as a Gibor Melchama, running his world in that sense. Whereas, as we're counting Sefirat HaOmer, we went from Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim all the way through Sefirat HaOmer towards the Evan HaSapir of Matan Torah. So at that point, Techeles, we can also refer back to the definition of the Ramban and Reversh, the Tachlis, the Tichla, where Hashem is ruling the world, and where Bezos Hashem, we can see his Rachamim also, as Chazal say by Matan Torah, Hashem appeared as the Zokein Mole Rachamim, as a elder full of mercy for his children. We should also, of course, remind ourselves that the Tzitzis, as Chazal teach us, end up equaling to Taryag. Tzitzis, the word itself, when you spell it with two yuds, comes out to 600. We have 8 chutim of the tzitzis as they appear at each corner, and 5 knots. So that, if you do the math, comes out to taryag, also very appropriate for Shavuos. And we can also note, in fact, a little interestingly, going further than Shavuos, we mentioned before when Moshe Rabbeinu was davening between Shavuos Batamuz and when he finally was able to go up and get the Luchos Shnios. So we know at the point when Moshe Rabbeinu had achieved Hashem's forgiving B'nai Israel, and there was, a tremendous Eis Ratzon. So Moshe asked Hashem, Har'eini Noas Kvodecha, show me, please, your glory. And Hashem responded, Ki lo yirani odom v'choi, you can't truly see me, even kivyochol, it's not possible. However, I'll put you in a crevice in the rock, I will go past you, and ro'isa es achoroi, you will see my back, or the results of my passing. And Chazal say over there that Moshe was shown his kesher tefillin, that's what we mentioned in Anam Zemiros, and they say that by the Yud Gimel Midos, when Hashem went past Moshe to teach him the Yud Gimel Midos Rachamim, he says, you thought, Moshe Rabbeinu, you needed to only mention Zuchus Avos, and if Zuchus Avos would ever end, that would be the end. It's not so, there's the Yud Gimel Midos Rachamim. So Chazal tell us that Hashem showed himself to Moshe as a shatz, as a shliach tzibur. He was misatech betalis, and he was dressed in a talis, which back in those days presumably certainly would have included Techeles. So perhaps again all these different midos, the combination of Din and Rachamim, preferably of course we prefer the Rachamim, and that would be perhaps the idea of Techeles, as we mentioned, from Rashi going from Tzias Mitzrayim all the way to the Ramban and Rav Hirsch, which remind us more of the Shavuos end, and also again this one Shorish, Samach, Pei, Reish, we can trace all the way, I think, from Tzias Mitzrayim through Sefirat HaOmer, and until, including Matan Torah, when we were Zochet, when the Zakenim and Moshe and Aaron were Zochet to this tremendous vision of the Evan HaSapir, which Yecheskel saw as the Kisei HaKavod. So my wish is that may we too be Zochet to see and experience Hashem's all-encompassing Midas Tuvo as we progress through Sefirat HaOmer towards Matan Torah. Thank you very much for listening.